Hello, welcome to episode 9 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. I'm not a cryptocurrency expert. I'm just a regular guy who got captivated by Bitcoin in early 2013. This podcast is my chance to talk to and learn from people involved in cryptocurrency. In December 2014, I went to visit Gray Bright, an Australian currently living in Los Angeles. He's been a maker since his youth, and he graduated with an advanced degree in robotic and mechatronic engineering. He has notable experience in product development, but what Gray enjoys most is hardware-software creations that bring a smile to his face. Cross this background with his keen interest in cryptocurrency, comedy, and entertainment, and I thought Gray would be really fun to interview. Remember that this interview was recorded in late 2014, so when we talk about last year, we mean 2013, and we say next year, we mean 2015. For links and photos, please be sure to check out this episode's page on letstalkbitcoin.com. Today I'm here with Gray Bright.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me, Rob.
I really was intrigued by you. We had a Los Angeles Bitcoin meetup. Boy, I don't know, was that a year ago now?
I think it probably was. I've lost all track of time. It might either earlier in the year or a year ago. Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so it was, I can't even remember. We've been at so many different like incubator type spaces.
Yeah.
Do you remember which space this was?
This one was at Cross Campus at its old location on Broadway.
Yeah. Okay. And the whole event was supposed to be people in the community presenting their projects. I think it was 5 minutes.
That's right. It was the premise of the night was show and tell, but it was show and tell your business. And so people were there to show that they required investment for a new business, or they wanted to show that they had a new marketing strategy. I took it on the literal form that I thought it was a show and tell, like in a primary school, and that people were going to bring along things that they had built. So I was the only person with a physical product that night, but it was a good night. I thoroughly had a ball.
I'm taking exception to that because I was there with a physical product, my Bitcoin keychains.
Oh, okay. Yeah, very good point.
And I screwed up that night because as a non-technical person, I thought, okay, I'm going to talk to all the people who come who want to know how to be more involved in Bitcoin. And then when I asked everyone to raise their hands who was like not a developer, there's like three people there and none of the developers really cared about non-technical ways to be involved in Bitcoin. So my presentation fell flat. But yours was probably the highlight of the night. And I couldn't tell how much was what you brought and how much was who you were. Turns out you're a stand-up comedian.
For fun, yes. Yep,
for fun. Absolutely. And you could tell during your presentation. It was just very entertaining. And is this the actual Bitcoin
ticker?
This
is it, yeah. So back at Cross Campus, it was actually in a cigar box. At that stage, I hadn't laser cut the case. And so what I'm showing here, for those listening on the podcast, in front of us, we have basically what looks like an old arcade cabinet in a clear laser cut container. There are then three displays on it, and the top display is the live last price, the middle display is the live sell price, and the bottom display is the live buy price. It also can display high, low. It's taking value from the BTC network, and it used to take, this makes me sad, it used to take Mt. Gox, but there's just nothing there anymore. How it's doing it is it's pulling the APIs, taking it basically from BTCe into an Arduino Yun. We're then passing data and shipping it out to these LED displays. And the reason I built it was actually, I know that we can see the price of the network on our phone or on our computer. We can see it in so many locations. But there's none that really give it that sort of tangibleness of it sitting there continuously acting like a live stock ticker or a something that you would see like in the stock market or anything like that. So that was why I built it at the beginning. And now, yeah, it's just a piece of technology that sits around my house continuously reminding how much the market's dropped in the past year or so.
And I never know if I want to touch price with people. Do you feel like talking about Bitcoin price?
There are so many theories around it. I very much have enjoyed sort of most moments playing with Bitcoin. So whilst, of course, I would love the price to be higher, I understand where it's at. And I take it that that's just, it's the way it is. As much as maybe I just validated in my head the loss at the moment, and I can attribute that to just saying, well, I've had a good time in the network. I've had fun. I've built things. I used to mine this lounge room that we're in. There used to be a miner in here, and it was boiling in here. The heat that it used to pump out was incredible. And so I'm glad to have gone through all that experience. So the price, it is what it is.
So what type of a mining rig did you have?
It used to be a Butterfly. Yeah, 60. And my delay period was probably, I think, 5 months from order to receiving. When I ordered it, it was sort of, from memory, I got it at the $1,299 stage, $1,299, I think. I saw that then over time, Butterfly Labs started to increase price. I enjoyed it. It was a nice device. The good thing about that one was it was simple. I could run it through a Mac very easily. It wasn't as complicated as sort of throwing in a GPU miner or anything like that. So whilst there was a lot of resentment towards Butterfly Labs, I did wait some time, but it served its purpose.
So is this 2013? Or 20?
It would have been, it must have been maybe 2013 that I ordered, I expect.
Seems like mining was already pretty hard at that time. I guess it was...
Look, the difficulty from memory was at least in the millions. Absolutely. Nowhere near the scale that it is now. I can't believe the complexity of the network now. It's just become incredible. There is so much computational power inside it. It's outstanding. Yeah. So that's why I got rid of my miner.
The heat.
Many months ago. Yeah. The heat actually helped over Christmas. It basically was a free source of a heater. We never turned on the heaters here over winter. No, I got rid of the miner because it just became the math of the energy use versus the reproduction of coin was just it no longer was viable. I was either at GoCoin or at an event somewhere, and whatever the genesis was, met an individual called Andrew Rayner, who's a composer, and we were chatting, and he was about to do a musical arrangement for a Bitcoin conference occurring in Amsterdam, from memory, many months ago. Mm-hmm. I was standing there showing him this device, and he posed me with a very interesting question. He said, is there any way that we could translate price into sound? And so initially my thoughts went to, well, yeah, If I look at the price right now, we're at $313.70. If you translated that into hertz, you would come out with possibly an audible frequency. You could modify it and increase it or decrease it as needed. So there's certainly a reference value to create sound. Just make sure that this works. Cool. So I'm going to upload a new version of software. This is a modified piece of software.
Okay. So I'm looking at your computer, and it looks like Arduino app that is connected to your this price ticker.
Exactly. And how I'm uploading now is wirelessly through our router to the Arduino. It's updating with this modified piece of code.
Oh, is it just that progress bar there?
Yeah. Okay. So it's done uploading. So now that it's done uploading... So that noise, what we're actually hearing is a complete translation of Bitcoin price into an audible spectrum. How I've done this is the buy price, the sell price, and the last price I allocate to a MIDI value. That MIDI value is then allocated towards either a piano, a guitar, or drum machine. What you then can do is take every piece of audio within there, and we could create a full orchestra. We could take the buy price to be the strings section, the high price to be guitars, the low to be bass, and as we see any change in price, you'll actually audibly hear the value change. So right now...
And I feel like I hear, what is it, like five tones each?
There's probably somewhere around there. I lose track. Did you hear that modification? It's just dropped slightly, and there's a slight change in there as well. So what's happening? we'll see a little flash come across here when the price changes, and we will now hear the actual price change. Yeah, so now that's definitely lower than before. So now we can audibly hear that the price went down.
Okay, and I just realized for the podcast, they're probably not hearing any of this.
So what we're hearing right now, we're going to hear it change. There's a slight modification that went on there. The buy price just quickly changed. Oh, there's a full modification again. So all of the prices, and I'm going to change the actual grand piano. Oh.
So that's a fallen price, the lower tone?
Yep. So what's happening there? Technically, what's occurring, how this works, I'm going to use my hands here for a second, and hopefully I can explain this well. I take reference of today's high price, and I take a reference of today's low price. Basically, we can say that the low price is 0%, the high price is 100%. If the buy price is sitting in the middle, then it's kind of like hitting the middle of the keyboard. If the buy price right now is right near where today's high is, then it's kind of like hitting at the very top of the piano. And if it's down at the below, near today's low, then it's like hitting a low note. And so that's how it's actually occurring, this change in key presses.
Interesting. And I feel like I have a sense for it listening to it, but I'm not actually able to mentally distinguish these different notes.
No, you're right. What occurred at the beginning, I had the absolute same. I couldn't work out what it was, because until you see which notes correlate to which, then yeah, it seems very scattered. Over time, now that I understand exactly how I can hear the changes, and whilst sitting right here right now, I wouldn't get it correct. After sort of, if you just have it playing softly in the background while working, you can absolutely notice any change in the network, and you can just sort of subconsciously correspond to what it is. Yeah.
So you feel like you can tell if it's the buy or sell price that just moved?
To an extent, yes, because I may get this wrong, but from memory I coded it so that it's the buy price is the first sort of three notes, the sell price is the next three notes, and then the last price is the trailing end.
Okay, thanks. Now I do hear the two groups of three now that you say that.
Yeah. And how it's, what we're hearing is, even though dun 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 dun, we're hearing, it's actually a Fibonacci sequence of numbers that I've injected in. Those Fibonacci sequence are then moved up and down the keyboard depending on where the price rests. So whilst the actual progression of keys remains the same, the location of where they're played along the keyboard varies depending on the price. I should get like a whiteboard to explain. Yeah.
Okay, so you, by the request of a composer who is going to be performing at the Amsterdam?
Yeah, what we ended up doing was at the time we got the price to spit out just a long, basically I think from memory it was about 30 seconds of this movement during a very volatile period of the price. Andrew then translated that into an actual sort of not orchestral movement, but just a musical frame that was played so that whilst it still sounded nice to the ear, there was actually Bitcoin theory within it. So it was an interesting concept to take. Like, as we hear this, there's a level of chaos to it. Even though there's the Fibonacci sequence, there's a level of chaos because of the price. He took that and then built some just gradual movements around it so it didn't sound as almost jarring and chaotic as this sounds.
So was this music performed at the, I think that was Bitcoin Foundation?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. From my understanding, yeah. It was used during either the introduction or in between interviews. I'm not too sure.
But okay.
From my understanding, yeah, it was played there. I just heard it change.
Yeah, the big change. It seems like...
Yeah.
3.14.9, 3.14.0.
I really enjoyed modifying it to do this because whilst this isn't anything absolutely amazing, I really do feel it adds another level of notification that I hadn't seen before. We'd certainly seen iPhones displaying the actual price, but having different versions of notification, I'm very interested in. Like the lights that you see around here, when I've got these set up regularly, each light bulb changes color depending on certain notifications, whether I get emails from people, whether temperature's going to be. Like say, for instance, I have a bulb set up that if it's going to rain that day, when I come out here in the morning, that bulb is blue so that I know that it's going to rain that day, which is incredibly rare in Los Angeles. But yeah, I enjoy the concepts of being able to take what is a very tangible. Oh, did you hear that change?
Yeah, it looks like we're on a tear here. Let's buy some Bitcoin.
3:15:06, we'll hear it. Yeah.
How exciting. Boy, it makes it seem really exciting. 10 cents higher.
So it's quite fun. And that's the thing. After time, you do start to, like what just happened there, we were talking, and you subconsciously just heard a note difference, and instantaneously you knew that there was a change in the network. When this occurs during a very volatile market, it's great because you hear, when someone, you know, like once we break...
This is fun.
When you break through, a price wall, and all of a sudden you have a fluctuation that really takes you from like today's low all the way up to today's high very quickly, you hear it go from like the entire spectrum of notes. And it's a very exciting thing.
What was that? That was quite a little jump there.
Up 47 cents, yeah. The closer we get to, let me find what today's high is. Today's high is 317. Today's low is 304. So we are just moving closer and closer towards today's high as we get there. You know, like when you play just the keys at the very far end of the keyboard?
Sounds like a toy piano. Almost.
Exactly, yeah. We're just getting closer and closer to there.
Fun.
I feel Bitcoin is actually going to become relevant in the automation space as well. Now, whilst humans operate on currency and for all of the reasons that exists, I feel that Bitcoin is actually a unique situation to allow a value of currency or simplistically allow transference of value between robot to robot. The reason for that, I feel, is that at some point it may become relevant to somehow discern value between robot, between workload, a value of payment to get a robot to do work for you. I feel like that may come about.
Wow. Well, thinking about robots and Bitcoin, you can get into some crazy places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some exciting, like just some good, fun things. I've had a bit of a look around to see if there's places to talk about this, but at the moment, I haven't really found people to sort of bounce ideas off or anything like that.
I can't remember where I feel like I heard this discussed. I don't know who to credit this to, but it's an interesting thought, just that all the science fiction we've had never really touched money and the type of thing that's possible with cryptocurrency. And
you're absolutely right. If you look at most of the science fiction, it's almost like films never show what goes on in the background. So in a film, you never see the protagonist go and use the bathroom. You rarely see them actually eat. You rarely see them do those things in the background. Science fiction, I've never come across one where it actually showed us the logistics or the complexities around what actually an autonomous or an automated service, what needs to go on in the background. How do you pay it? How does it get serviced? Who owns it? How is the fleet actually assigned and so on? Possibly one could be, say for instance, we're in 15 years time, I have a little robot who's really good at renovating houses, can build a patio. To offer its services to you to build your patio, I feel like the transaction could be a transaction of Bitcoin to that robot, which then would provide value to the robot to go and perform its own self-service, perform its own upgrades. We always talk about artificial intelligence from the point of view that it is self-aware. I feel like being self-aware means that it also needs a method of simplistically looking after itself, upgrading. And we know in this world, if it's going to be self-aware and it wants to exist by itself and not have a fundamental owner, then therefore, like a human, it needs to look after itself. And I think, yeah, maybe Bitcoin will be how it transacts with society.
All right. So I can't help but worry if it's somehow a sentient robot programmed to get Bitcoin. Is Bitcoin part of Skynet? Is this Bitcoin? Give me Bitcoin, you know?
What we may have just discussed is the first 5 minutes of Skynet. Maybe that is actually what, once it became self-aware, it then realized that it needed to have all of the Bitcoin it could get.
Takes people's bloody thumbs, puts them on the thumbprint reader.
That's exactly it. Yep.
Everything has unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, you know, I feel like proponents of Bitcoin often don't want to explore anything that could be a negative light. There's enough negative lights to Bitcoin, and who wants to present more more stones to be thrown? But what are some unintended consequences of Bitcoin? Like you know, what we're thinking about with this robot, and I don't know if there can be an answer for that.
Or
I'm sure there are, but you might, I don't know if how quick you are.
Yeah, no, I feel one of the unintended consequences that we've just naturally discovered is the increase pressure that we have as a community placed upon the energy production network. So, and I don't know the exact values, but certainly the increase in computational power has certainly had an increase in just power in general being needed by the network. I remember seeing an estimation of how much electricity has been used and is used. I think that certainly is an accidental, and not only is it an accidental effect of the network, it is one that will continue to increase.
Boy, I'll tell you, I've got solar panels on my roof.
Oh, really?
I'm a turn the lights off guy. I'm sure there's some big things I'm overlooking, but
that's awesome.
But so that's a really difficult thing for me, because I really, you know, feel like I don't want to use energy more than I have to.
And yeah.
I mean, it feels like literally the energy to power the network is exactly the strength of the security of the network. To me, that seems like that would be a real revolution, something that either solves everyone's power need for power, or somehow an improvement. I don't know what it could possibly be with the Bitcoin model to
I feel like we are based on such a computational equation to dictate who receives more coins that whilst we still scramble for coins, we naturally are going to just keep adding and adding computational power to the network, which theoretically will only increase power consumption unless there is a dramatic change in the processor itself, in how it solves it. And so say, like the transition from the GPUs to AT6 and so on, if we found a new processor that has a different operation that uses less power but more computations, or just simplistically more equations, then that would reduce the power. However, that I don't see happening anytime soon at all.
Are the ASICs, developments of ASICs, somehow keeping up and not requiring more energy? Like, I can't understand how it keeps growing.
There's two different methods. There's either adding more chips per circuit board so that you fundamentally just have a more powerful computer, or reducing the size of basically the silicon lines on the processor itself. So as you go down smaller and smaller nanometers, you just have more computational power within that same chipset. Both of them, more often than not, result in increased power consumption if we continue the way that we are, which I think is just going to... I actually don't know of any other method that would actually really fundamentally work apart from what we're on in terms of proving who's done what to to the network.
And I don't know, is it a pretty, has the line been pretty, or the curve, I should say, been pretty predictable? Like, could you see what was going 6 months ago and be fairly accurate, you think?
I feel like the network has had just like logarithmic growth in terms of complexity.
And when you say complexity, you mean hash rate? Basically?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I don't see any solution to it unless the only, this just wouldn't work, if we somehow banned certain methods of processing, then we could bring it back down to the days, like the early days, where if we restricted it to only being on GPUs, but of course people would then just get banks of GPUs as they did. So it's one that there is no foreseeable solution in my eyes.
I'm just wondering if the curve is fairly predictable, or has been, I guess things would always change. I mean, what is the predicted, I mean, we talk about current energy production. What's the energy production going to be in a year?
Let's quickly see whether...
You're going to Google it?
Yeah.
Looks like a Bitcoin talk thread. That's pretty much what, right along the lines of what I was thinking. This is from Biodiesel Chris, senior member on Bitcoin Talk.
Yeah. I'm going to read out one line here, which is quite interesting. The inevitable arms race to increase hash versus watt is irrelevant. From a microeconomic standpoint, that just serves to distribute the coins to the players. And further, from a macroeconomic point of view, the amount of money spent on power will almost nearly match the current price, with some latency adjustment periods and some caveats for people who voluntarily lose money, steal power, etc.
I think I've heard that type of thing before.
Which is worrying in a way, because if the coin increased again up into the thousands of dollars, then that means that everyone is more than happy to spend that much on the power consumption.
That sure makes sense.
Yeah, it's actually quite... It's one I hadn't thought about before, but that is actually the negative, as you were saying before, the negative ramifications of Bitcoin. If we actually do see Bitcoin go up into the $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 marks, we are also going to see people thinking it acceptable to spend that much on power consumption. And we're going to, they'll probably buy more computing power because the price is higher, spend more on electricity because the price is higher. Those are the accidental negative ramifications that come about by having a higher buy price or a higher price in general.
Today's magic word is robot. R-O-B-O-T. Use the magic word to claim your share of this week's LTB coin distribution on letstalkbitcoin.com. Adam B. Levine and his talented staff of coders are implementing new interfaces and uses for LTB coin, and it's easy to sign up for a counter wallet and an LTB account. So what are you waiting for?
I feel Bitcoin has certainly done what was needed for years, which was a currency for the internet, a universal currency. I'm Australian. Me sending money back to Australia is just a nightmare. Not only from a Forex point of view, from price that I get charged to the bank fees, tele fees, all of these things. And then simplistically, if I want to buy something on the internet, Bitcoin easier, tipping easier, microtransactions, all of those things. But I think it's going to give so much innovation to so many categories that we haven't actually seen it yet. And I hope... Like how we're hearing changes occur right now, I think audible visualization of markets is something that I hadn't seen before, and I can correlate it to that, Bitcoin helped me in my own little world innovate notifications in a way that I hadn't really thought about before. I had never thought about using music as an actual method of notification of the market or context around me. And so I think in that way Bitcoin sort of gave me the ability to innovate in my own little world, and that'll just keep happening all around.
It definitely inspires people in different ways. It's some people are doing it in groups, and some people are very isolated, as I've come to find. Doing all kinds of amazing things just as a fun little hobby, just like it's been for you.
That's exactly it. And an interesting one, the The Dogecoin community, when they came together to sponsor the NASCAR, I went out to a bar in Burbank and met up with about 30 Dogecoin enthusiasts that day. And it was incredible to see the cross spectrum of individuals that went there. And we were all basically just brought together by pretty much a subreddit of Dogecoin. That was then, it was almost like you had to take a group on Reddit, go to the subreddit, then you had to find the ones in LA that were then ready to actually not only sponsor a NASCAR, but then wanted to go to a bar. And it was amazing to see that, yeah, the people I met that day, someone, I bought a physical Bitcoin off someone.
Are you talking about the Bitcoin specie?
Let me grab it.
The silver?
Yeah,
with the QR code?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Joseph. I interviewed him on one of my podcasts. I don't know if you know much about him. You think he's just a coin guy, but I mean, he's a security guy and real involved.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff, but yeah.
See, what a classic. It's I find that really interesting that...
You like the physical thing.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Well, I mean, do you have other, Bitcoins that basically hide the private key, Casius and all of those?
Most of my security is done through a couple of offline wallets.
Well, this is more just the, for me, it's a, I don't know, fetishization. Or I remember when I was first getting into Bitcoin and I'd see they'd always show the pictures of Casius coins. I had no idea what they were. And I remember coming to Bitcoin Talk and go, what are these things? Yeah. I think I understand Bitcoin, but what are these? And I love the paper wallets. I love trying to figure out ways to tape them or close them up that you would maybe be tamper evident. I don't know. So that's been my thing. I have a number of different coins with hidden private keys and tamper evident holographic stamps.
Yeah, it gives a tangible nature to it. I really like it. Yeah. There's definitely something about the tangible product and so on.
There definitely is. I enjoy it. And that's how I gave gifts back last year. Basically all the younger people in my family, nephews and stuff like that, they all got one Bitcoin paper wallet.
Oh, that's awesome.
The price range, I wanted to be fair to everybody, so some of them was under $100 and the most expensive was three something.
Yeah.
Fortunately, everyone's birthday was done before the price. I don't know what I would have done in, November of last year if I had a birthday that I hadn't given a Bitcoin to yet.
I think it is absolutely something that people in the Bitcoin community can do in increasing awareness is to, you just need to give out like a tiny, tiny bit, just a tiny amount of Satoshi. And then that gets someone else interested in it. And it's not about then giving advice of how you should do this and you should do that. It's purely just creating a tangible feeling within them that they are, that they have access to it. Because I think one of the problems with Bitcoin is it is still locked in a world that is very technologically focused. It is still, it's not mainstream, and I don't think it will get mainstream until the mainstream really start educating people on how it's used and it becomes easier to use.
So tough with security nowadays, and I mean, we just had the Sony breach, which...
Yeah.
But just all the security, as things get more and more and more complex, that seems like, I guess, the enemy of security is complexity.
Yeah.
Keep everything going, and... I mean, I just assume that most of, friends and family who aren't real technical probably have a virus on their computer or something. I don't know. Bitcoin, you just don't have any leeway.
You're absolutely right. It's tricky. For me, the companies that I admire, and I know, look, everyone's always got opinions on who's best and so on. I think Coinbase are really, in my eyes, leading the way in making this a more mass acceptable. I think the way that they handle their merchant side and their wallet side, I think is great.
Have you tried Circle?
No. It's like good?
It's super user friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, you go through lots of know your customer stuff.
Yeah.
The same, I think, with Coinbase.
Yeah.
But just super easy. And the really fun thing is you can use your credit card, which they used to say you could never use your credit card because you could reverse a credit card charge. It could be stolen. But I think they do so much know your customer.
Okay.
And, I mean, you pay the fee that would be involved, but it's just kind of fun just to use your credit card. Just to me, like I thought I'd heard for so long that'll never be a possibility.
But yeah, yeah. It is.
And maybe the loss, they can absorb a few losses. I'm sure they're just trying to get market share right now.
That must be. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I remember like Coinbase. Yeah, I had to do the bank account verification.
There was a time that was scary too. Are they going to shut down my bank account because yeah. I'm buying things on Coinbase?
That's exactly. Is this completely wrong? Will the government come after me? Yeah.
Well, or not the government, just the bank trying to protect themselves.
Yeah.
That was an interesting discussion with Micah and Brock. Theoretically, a bank, if they get caught for just a small type of not crossing their T's as far as know your customer, they can suffer huge fines.
Yeah,
and they just don't want to mess with. What are they going to make with Bitcoin right now, I guess, by interfacing with it? And
it becomes highly complicated. It becomes just absolutely so complicated once you start thinking like, what's the right steps for Bitcoin? What is the right way that it should move forward? I think obviously it'll just keep marching on. Oh!
Okay, 314.
That was a massive drop.
Certainly sounds that way from the pitch, yeah.
How interesting. You've become very, you absolutely recognize it now.
Oh, like that you can't miss a big changes in pitch.
It's incredible. I really, I'm very happy that we've been able to listen to it for such a long period of time, because I usually show this device to people over a short period of time. You know, it'll be like a few minutes at most. And I know that they appreciate what has been built, but they don't get the first-hand experience of actually sitting there after time. Because when you say to them, you just leave it playing in the background, then you notice it. They're usually like, what, you have to leave that in the background? But when you do, like once you work away, it just becomes like the sound of traffic or the sound of someone playing in the street. It just becomes second nature. And yeah, you subconsciously recognize it.
Well, it was definitely really interesting to talk to you, Gray. I really appreciate it.
Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure. Honestly, thank you so much for coming around and having a chat with me about all this stuff.
Really neat to see all the things you're doing, and can't wait to see some more stand-up comedy from you too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'll continue to make videos and talk show at the beginning of next year.
Where do we look for the talk show?
So that'll be held at the new Cross Campus venue, and it's at the moment it is January 23rd.
So you'll be recording a live show there.
Yep, live talk show. Follows the same format as Conan O'Brien. There will be monologue, sketch, interview, musical act. We may put a couple more sketches in there, but it's pretty much if you could imagine a Conan O'Brien, but purely for technology. So we'll be interviewing CTOs, CEOs, engineers, mathematicians. We are going to film it. And so the show's called The Tomorrow Show. We'll be putting up a video afterwards.
And do you have that URL or anything?
Yeah, and okay. I've got to check out thetomorrowshow.io. And yes, I think that'll be a good fun show. It's one I put on a show a few years ago in a similar format, but it was just straight comedy, and it was a great night. It was silly. It's variety. It's just fun. It's time that tech had a talk show. Let's have a look at the, what are we on as a price? $314. We have hovered all around $314 this entire episode.
Who says Bitcoin's volatile?
That's exactly it. Once again, Rob, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. This has been real fun.
Nice place. A ball. I love the indoor pool over there.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
All right, let's go swimming.
And the live studio audience.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Bitcoin Game. Please let me know you listen to the podcast by following or tweeting to The BTC Game on Twitter or commenting on this episode's page on letstalkbitcoin.com. You can find a listing of all the Bitcoin Game episodes at thebitcoingame.com. See you next time.